British Airways welcomes you to Orlando, where it's okay to play on the best roller coasters on Earth, on stunning golf courses, on the top tables of world-class restaurants.
Visit the one-of-a-kind Orlando, where it's okay to play on and on from just £499 per person for a seven-night holiday. Book now at ba.com/Orlando. British Airways. To fly, to serve. Offer on economy return fares booked by the 16th of November. Booking fees may apply. Limited availability. Selected dates, terms and conditions apply.
Wednesday, May 13, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every Wednesday, bringing you just a little bit different of an outlook on the world of sports than you will find anywhere else. You know, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, or if you're an Android person and you don't, you know, use an iPhone or an iPod or whatever, go over to Podcast Republic or go to Podcast Addict, and they will get you taken care of. You can subscribe to the podcast there. That way, you don't miss any episodes. As soon as the new one comes up, you just click refresh. It comes right up to your device, and you can listen to it whenever you need to. Hey, if you get a chance, share the podcast. You know there's some sports fans that you work with, or maybe that are family members, maybe that are just friends. Make sure that they get a chance to hear it as well. If you would like to contact me, a few different ways you can do it. And I've heard from a few of you this week. I've actually heard from some people this week. A couple ways you can contact me. Twitter handle at Daily Dose Sports. Same name for Facebook. That is Daly Dose Sports. Website. If you haven't been over to the website, I encourage you to go over there. We put up new articles every week. Maybe have a poll. Maybe have some comparisons. A couple different things you want to check out. The website is dailydosesports.wordpress.com. You can find us there. If you would like to email the show directly, and I have had some emails this week I want to talk to you about in just 1 minute. The email address, dailydosesports@gmail.com. You can send something directly to the show. It's kind of funny because, you know, we put out the show every week. I've told you in the past our numbers are slowly but steadily going up, and I do appreciate that so much. I heard from a number of Patriot fans this week. I heard a lot of things from some Patriot fans. Never fear. We are going to talk about Deflategate a little bit and kind of give you a different look at that. I've heard from some Patriot fans this week saying that they are planning to boycott the first few games of the season, especially that first night. They're going to boycott those games and either not go to the game or not watch. So that was interesting. But I actually heard from an emailer, and I'm going to mess this name up, and I apologize in advance. Arkady, A-R-K-A-D-Y, in the Russian Federation, that said that they listen to the Daily Dose over in Russia, and they enjoy the show. How about that? We have our first Russian listener. Enjoy that. Appreciate it so much, and thank you so much for emailing us. It's nice to know that you're out there. Hey, this week, we do want to talk a little bit about the NFL. Obviously, Deflategate and the big story with Tom Brady, but I think there's a couple things that I think the mass media outlets are missing when they're looking at this story. We got to hand out some NBA awards. I know we're a little bit late handing out some NBA regular season awards. Here we are, you know, 2-3 weeks into the playoffs, and we haven't gotten to those awards just yet. And if we get a chance, we're going to talk some Major League Baseball, maybe some NHL hockey, and of course, you never ever want to miss the Daily Dose Top 5, a very, very popular segment that you always want to make sure that you stick around for. We've got some news coming out today that I do want to get to before we really, really get going. First off, former University of North Carolina head coach Bill Guthridge, who served 30 years as an assistant to Dean Smith, did pass away today at the age of 77. Very sad story. Was fortunate enough to hear Guthridge speak one time. You might remember when Dean Smith retired, Guthridge had been his longtime assistant, and he stepped over and took over that head coaching job. Bill Guthridge today passes away. You might have heard earlier this week, Bobby Bowden, former Florida State coach Bobby Bowden, referred to former Seminoles quarterback Jameis Winston as an embarrassment to the university. He said, I think it's a consensus among Florida State fans and boosters. He was an embarrassment in a lot of ways to the university. He won a lot of games, probably one of the best football players that ever attended Florida State, but he hurt himself off the field. The good news is he's young enough to get over that. He just can't make those junior high decisions that he made when he was in college. Now, I want you to keep this in mind. We have to have some context to this. Bobby Bowden is calling this kid an embarrassment. I want you to remember that Florida State under Bowden had that cheating scandal in 2009 when it was found that most of the players on the football team were not even taking their own tests. They had someone else doing it for them. Deion Sanders never attended class. He just played. On the 99 championship team, Peter Warwick and Lavernius Coles were given a bunch of free stuff. Bowden only, he kicked Coles off the team. He suspended Warwick for 2 games and let him keep playing because, you know, he helped him keep winning. And then when Sebastian Janikowski was out missing curfew and roofying girls, he didn't suspend him whatsoever. That guy is saying, hey, Jameis, you might need to cool it just a little bit. That's pretty amazing. Looks like, remember last week I told you that Tiger Woods and Lindsey Vonn had split up? It looks like it's not just just his career that she was concerned with. Apparently, I know this is going to be shocking. If you're not sitting down, you need to sit down. Apparently, Tiger was seeing some other women. What? What? No way. Tiger's seeing other women? Next thing you're going to tell me that water's wet and snow is cold. Hey, tonight we have the Washington Capitals and New York Rangers in a game 7 in the NHL to move on to the conference finals. That should be an interesting one to keep on. And I do have some local news for you here. A couple things locally. You know, apparently the Rockies shortstop Troy Tulowitzki is going to sit down with his agent and with team management and discuss a trade. They're going to discuss a trade because the Rockies are so horrible this year, which I told you they would be. I told you it was coming. I said, hey, I know they've won like, you know, 6 games or whatever, but don't believe the hype because the bottom is going to fall out. They're now 11-18 and Tulo wants out. So they're going to sit down and they're going to discuss some options. And the thing that stands out to me, I guess, the most is what, you know, you have these pieces of paper. What color scheme fits best with Troy Tulowitzki? Because we know he's not going to be on the field very much. So what injury report is it that he's going to look the best on? Because we know that's where he's going to end up year after year after year after year. Tulowitzki going to end up on someone else's injury report besides the Colorado Rockies. He's going to seek a trade. Best of luck. You know, I talked about this just a little bit last week, but the Denver Nuggets... sit down. The Denver Nuggets are going to start searching for a new head coach. They've been busy not being in the playoffs, but they're really going to get after it now. And there's a couple of different coaches that they have in mind. They're talking at least a little bit to Mike D'Antoni. We've heard now that the Pelicans have fired head coach Monty Williams. They're talking a little bit to Monty Williams. Oh, good. Another, you know, coach that's not very good to come here. We know that they're talking to a few other coaches, and it sounds like they will at least discuss maybe talking a little bit with former Oklahoma City coach Scott Brooks. Why can't the Nuggets just go out and get a good coach? Why do we have to get all the retreads? How come we can't? This is the reason we can't have nice things. They are also going to talk to Melvin Hunt, who, you know, took over and didn't really do anything. I guess Alvin Gentry's on the on the list. I don't. Are any of these coaches? Do any of these coaches even raise your pulse whatsoever? Because they sure don't mind. I can't figure out for the life of me why this franchise continues to be one of the worst franchises every single year. I will go on record as saying, Rockies and Nuggets, I am completely fine if you just pack up and move to like Mobile, Alabama. I have no problem with that because the way you run your franchise year in, year out just shows a complete disregard for your fans. You could not care less. You do the same stupid mistakes. And even if you finally get it right, George Karl, you go out and sabotage yourself and get rid of the guy because, I don't know, he has an opinion or he thinks for himself or something like that. We can't have that. We won't have dissension in the ranks of these top-notch organizations. Nuggets and Rockies can go away. Hey, let's get into the show. Let's get going. Got a lot of things to get to today. For it being kind of, you know, the kind of a weird time of year, we do have NBA playoffs, we have NHL playoffs, Major League Baseball's underway. And what's dominating the headlines? You know what's dominating the headlines. What dominates them year-round? The NFL. New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady was suspended 4 games. And from the Patriots franchise, the NFL fined them $1 million. And took 2 draft picks. They took a first rounder next year, and then the following year, they took a 4th rounder. Now, that first rounder, That one's rough. But that fourth rounder, oh, that really twisted the knife in there. And, you know, like I said, I heard from a lot of fans on Twitter, email, you know, texts, and they said, hey, you said nothing would happen to the Patriots. What happened? What happened? They got hammered. They got blasted. The NFL came out. They suspended the golden boy for 4 games. That, you know, they took the draft picks. They fined him $1 million. They hammered him. What happened? Did they? Did they hammer him? We're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. You know, there's two camps when you're talking about this whole situation. There's kind of two camps. And one side, they hate Bill Belichick, and they think he's a jerk, and they think he's arrogant, and he's a cheater, and you know, the whole Spygate situation. So anything the Patriots do, throw them out. They're a bunch of cheaters. I mean, holding penalty, throw them out. Pass interference, throw them out. You know, whatever it might be. And I understand that. I get that. But then you have the other camp, and this camp is kind of even more entertaining. You have Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. They're both victims. They've never done anything whatsoever. All they do is outsmart people, and they have to pay for it. And you guys are just jealous. Here's the thing. Both sides are wrong, honestly. You know, as usual, the truth lies somewhere in between the two. You know, are they victims of a witch hunt? No. Has too much been made of this whole thing? Yeah, probably so. But are they innocent? No, stop it. And stop ringing up the word sting. They keep saying, well, it was a sting operation. I even heard Tom Brady's agent drop the word sting operation. You know what they catch in sting operations? Criminals. That's who they catch in sting operations. So you might want to move away from that word. You know, but the Patriots proved the old adage, the cover-up is worse than the crime. Let's look at a few facts, because I don't want to look at, you know, like feelings or whimsies. I heard someone speaking this week, and they talked about, well, how dare the NFL do this and tarnish Tom Brady's career? I mean, couldn't they just let this one go? Well, we have to deal with facts. We can't deal with what we feel. Well, I don't feel like Tom would cheat. I don't feel like they would try to do this intentionally. I can't, you know, live in what I feel. I've got to deal with facts. The fact is, the NFL doesn't want this. I promise you, they don't want this. I've told you before, the Patriots and the NFL are in bed together. Why on earth would the NFL want their most prominent member to be found cheating? Their Super Bowl winner, their golden boy, their MVP, they don't want him to be found cheating. I will promise you, when this Ted Wells report came out, on Monday, I think it was, the actual decision came down, but the report came out before that, and we saw that it found Brady guilty at least of circumstantial evidence, I'll guarantee Roger Goodell was laying on the floor crying and kicking his feet while hugging a photo of Touchdown Tommy and just saying, the world is not fair. I can't believe they found that. I guarantee it. He wanted nothing to do with this. Patriots owner Robert Kraft has been one of Goodell's biggest supporters. And here's the thing. Goodell doesn't have many supporters. Keep in mind that Roger Goodell, I know this is going to shock some of you that you know, there might be some of you out there that don't. Do you realize who his boss is? His boss is the owners. He works for the owners. Do you think he wants to find his bosses guilty? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. Now, here's another fact. The Ted Wells report that came out cited text messages from locker room attendant Jim McNally, who, by the way, referred to himself as the deflator. So hilarious. He's the deflator. We didn't do anything. He's the deflator. And it seems that McNally or his counterpart, John Yastrzemski, whichever one, they were sneaking, not just going in and messing with the balls. They were sneaking into the officials' locker room and doctoring the balls. Now, they did this on their own, right? Right? You got this minimum wage equipment manager job. I'm just going to go. You know what? Tom likes them a little soft. I'm going to sneak into the officials' locker room when they're not there, when they're out on the field checking stuff, and I'm going to let a little air out. Just on my own. Because, I mean, I make it $9 an hour. It's totally worth the risk, right, of never getting a job again. Right? You know, the most disturbing thing most disturbing thing of all this is the fact that Tom Brady has let these two clowns equipment managers kind of hang for what he has done. I seriously, let's hope he at least gets them those pair of Uggs that they wanted, because they're both suspended indefinitely without pay. Classy. Keeping that classy. You're gonna just throw them under the bus and say they just acted on their own accord. They just went out and did that on their own. I don't know why they did it. Very, very, very strange. Now, here's the thing, though. Because you've got these ball boys that are now on the hook, these minimum wage ball boys, and they were given these balls. And Tom didn't have any idea about any of this. Here's the thing I want you to remember. Do you remember after the Super Bowl? Remember after the Super Bowl and the Patriots came back and they won and the Seahawks went down and they called that goofy pass play. It gets intercepted. Patriots, I don't want to say get a lucky win, but they kind of get a little bit of a fluky win. And on that same side, they've had a couple fluky losses in the Super Bowl. It's all kind of, single elimination tournament again. But remember everyone saying how this proves now, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback to ever walk the face of the planet? Do you remember that? Because there were a lot of people saying that. There were people on ESPN. There were people on all the major networks. And they were saying, because Tom Brady now has 4 Super Bowls, and he didn't, and he's been to 6, and he's done this, and now he, without a doubt, is the greatest quarterback to ever walk the planet. It's not even close. Keep that in mind. And here's the thing that I want you to think about. We just have this situation now where Brady didn't know. I didn't know anything. I didn't know the footballs were being deflated. It was all these equipment guys. They did it all. Yeah, they know what I like or whatever, but I didn't do anything. I didn't do any of it. I didn't know about it. You're telling me that, and remember in that press conference he had, that embarrassing, awful press conference when he went up there and they talked to him and they asked him and he was, I don't know. I didn't know about any of this. I've never done any of this. I had no idea. Now you're telling me in one space, you're telling me here's the greatest quarterback who's ever lived. And now you're telling me here's the stupidest man who's ever lived, because I know there are third string intramural quarterbacks playing down at Denver University that if you gave them the 2 footballs, they would be able to tell the difference. But the greatest quarterback who's ever walked God's green earth can't tell the difference. Are you being serious with me? Come on now. Come on now. Don't fall into this nonsense. Now, the Super Bowl footballs, because remember, now we keep hearing, well, none of this helped them win. It didn't help them win, right? Right? None of this helped. Because look, they blew out the Colts when they made sure the balls were right. They blew out the Colts. So that obviously, that obviously proves. And then, hey, at the Super Bowl, they had these footballs under lock and key. So if that's the case, Tom Brady was still great. There's no way any of this helped them win. It couldn't have helped them. Right? Well, no, wait a second. Let's look at one thing. Let's just look at a couple little facts. I know I'm dealing in the world of fact and not the land of unicorns and leprechauns. But let's just look at a couple of facts. From 2000 to 2006, because this is all about passing, right? This is all about Brady's ability to throw the ball. I don't know why he likes it that soft. Aaron Rodgers says that that's a little bit of a struggle for him to throw a ball that soft. He likes it actually a little more inflated. I don't know why Brady likes it that soft. I don't know if it's a small hands thing. I don't know if it's a grip thing. I don't know what it is. Or maybe it doesn't have anything to do with passing the football at all. From 2000 to 2006, New England Patriot ball carriers fumbled once every 42 carries. Once every 42 carries. The league average is about 46 carries. That's the average. There's some highs. There's some lows. There's teams that play in domes. There's teams that play outside. The average is about 46. Patriots were about at 42. Then a rule was put in after the 2006 season that was backed by the Patriots. It was backed by a few different players. It was backed by Peyton Manning, I know. Where each team provides its own footballs, so that their offense plays with their own footballs instead of the home team just providing all the footballs. Since that rule, from 2000 to present, Patriot runners, now remember, they were fumbling once every 42 carries. Since that rule went in, Patriot runners are now fumbling once every 74 carries. That's almost double. The average, again, is 46. Now, maybe Bill Belichick really found a really, really good fumble drill. Hey, this, you hold it like this and you just never put the ball on the ground. Here's the problem. They don't play inside. They play in pretty nasty, nasty elements. I've seen the Broncos go up to New England in some horrible weather. Just 2 years ago, we saw them go up there. It wind, ice, rain, snow. We've seen it all in New England. You know, it's kind of like they play like in a Chicago kind of environment or a Buffalo or you know, Green Bay or something. They play in that kind of environment. Let's just keep this in mind. The Patriots, on average now, are fumbling every 74 carries. Chicago is at 47. Buffalo is at 40. The Green Bay Packers are at 52. The closest to them in the entire league, league-wide, the closest team to the New England Patriots is the Baltimore Ravens at 55. 55 to 74? That's a little bit of a difference, isn't it? Now, again, we look at these games, this advantage of this softer ball, it didn't help, right? I mean, we saw them blow out the Colts, it didn't help, right? Well, there was that 35-31 win against the Ravens in the playoffs where they didn't have any fumbles. It didn't help, right? There was that game towards the end of the season against the New York Jets in a 17-16 game when the Patriots clinched home field advantage and they didn't have any fumbles. None of this helped them, right? Right? I mean, this was more just about goofy PSIs and footballs and silly doctoring of the balls, and everybody does it. And there is no advantage gain, though. Right? Right? I don't know. I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and say it did, but I can't say that it didn't, because we know that football is that game of inches, that game of you know, very, very small, fine lines of between winning and losing. You're going to tell me that none of this helped? Maybe. I don't know. I will say this. You can't just tell me across the board blanket statement, this didn't help them win, because I don't know that. And you know what? You don't either. But hey, the league hammered them. I mean, Brady's out for 4 games, $1 million, 2 draft picks. Well, except for that they didn't hammer him quite as bad as it looked. Because Brady is out, but he's going to be out without pay. And if you're out without pay, the Patriots are actually going to save about $20,000. It's not exactly hitting them real hard. And, you know, Brady's going to appeal for a lesser sentence. And he's probably going to get it dropped down to 1 or 2 games. It'll probably get reduced. They'll probably reduce it. Here's my question. How come Bill Belichick skates on all this? He didn't do anything, right? But remember Bountygate? Remember when the Saints were paying their players for injuring other teams, and the league came in and they told head coach Sean Payton, hey, it better not happen again. And Sean Payton, you know, didn't do anything, and they found out it was still going on, and Sean Payton got suspended for a full season. And they said, hey, Sean Payton didn't do anything. And the league said, well, he should have. And they said, well, he didn't even know about. Well, he should have. He should have known. It was on his watch. Bill Belichick didn't get anything. And this is a guy that has a history. This is a guy that has Spygate behind him already. Yeah. Did they really hammer the Patriots? $1 million. That's actually not really $1 million. Brady will probably sit a game. They took the 2 draft picks. The 2 draft picks is the only thing that's going to hurt him. Although, Patriots being who they are, they'll probably play Jimmy Garoppolo. He'll go out there and look halfway decent in the system, and then they'll probably trade him for another draft pick, so they'll get that back anyways. Not quite as hard. Not quite as hard as you might think. Now, here's the one thing. We keep hearing about, well, the Patriots were cooperative. Brady was cooperative. He did this and this and this. It's not quite like that. And I was interested to watch yesterday, because Then the Patriots have come out and they've kind of said, hey, Wells' investigation didn't prove anything. We still maintain that we didn't do anything wrong. Wells doesn't know what he's doing. I just want to throw out this word of caution. Be careful. Be careful. Because here's the quote. Yesterday, when that word was coming out that the Patriots weren't happy with the Wells investigation, Wells kind of got upset. And keep in mind, this is a big-time investigator. This is not some podunk guy that has no idea and you know what he's doing in this investigative business. Here's what Ted Wells said yesterday. Because he asked for Tom Brady's cell phone. He also asked for a couple interviews that the Patriots wouldn't grant him. But he asked for Tom Brady's cell phone. And here's what he said. I was willing to not take possession of the phone. I don't want to see any of your private information. You keep the phone. I just need to see the requested documents. Tom Brady wouldn't give up the phone. Now, you're going to start hearing the Patriots, it's already started, the gnashing of teeth and the wailing and the saying, the NFL just picks on us and the NFL just comes after us and this is totally unfair and Ted Wells' investigation was a farce. Be careful. Be very careful. Because if you get into this appeal process and this ends up in some sort of lawsuit or a libel suit or a legal case, remember, right now, this isn't a legal case. And everybody's talking about, whether or not there was enough evidence. This isn't a legal case. This is an employer incident. This isn't a legal case. But if you push for this to be a legal case, you're going to get a situation where Ted Wells they're going to come in and say, okay, we're not going to ask for your phone. We're going to take your phone and we're going to get every single thing out of it. And you might end up biting off a little bit more than you can chew. Keep an eye on this appeal process. Let me get one thing on the table. And you know, if you're listening to The Daily Dose, and I don't want to bore you through all the Deflategate stuff, but if you're listening to The Daily Dose, credit to you because, as usual, we're going to look at things a little bit differently. We try to look at things with a little bit different angle. And we try to look at things, hopefully, like we've had people say in the past, more of the thinking man sports show. Here's the thing about all of this stuff. You're going to have all these media outlets. Well, what were the PSI? What were the balls? And this is all about the balls. And this is all about this. And did Brady know? And here's what this is about. This is about the New England Patriots' disregard for anything that the NFL tells them. That's all this is about. This doesn't have anything to do with footballs. This doesn't have anything to do with air pressure. This doesn't have anything to do with PSI. This has to do with the Patriots being told, stop doing this, and they refuse to stop doing it. If you look back at Spygate, back in 2004, they were told, hey, we've allowed you to videotape the other team's coaches with volume. That has got to stop. Everybody's going to stop it. They sent out a league-wide memo the week of and said, this has to stop. It will not be tolerated anymore. The Patriots did it anyway. Now, we have this same situation, and they are saying, there is some speculation that the Colts had complained to the league back in week 11 and said, hey, the footballs that the Patriots are playing with are different than everyone else's. And so, as a result, it kind of looks like, with the ball boy sneaking into the locker room, maybe the NFL had already said something to the Patriots about this. This has nothing to do with footballs. If you think that it does, you're missing the big picture. If you think that it does, you're completely naive. This doesn't have to do with footballs. This has to do with the league saying, we keep telling you to do stuff and you keep ignoring what we're telling you. And as a result, we're going to make it stop right here. I want to see the appeal process. I want to see where this goes because I think it's going to be interesting. How hard do the Patriots really pursue the appeal? Do they just come out and say, hey, we're going to appeal it, we're going to lawyer up, and then they don't really do it and they just drop it to two games? Or do they come out and they say, hey, we feel like the Wells investigation was shoddy, and Wells says, okay, well then let's go to court and let's both get, you know, some good lawyers and let's get after it. Because if that happens, oh, it's going to be a glorious day. It's going to be so, so much fun to watch. Sit back, get your popcorn, and let's get ready for some mud to start being thrown because that is going to be the most, most fun. Looking at the Patriots without Brady, like I said, they'll survive for 4 weeks. Not a huge deal. This isn't nearly as big of a punishment as everyone's making it out to be. Both sides. I told you there's two camps on this. Both sides a little bit too excited about this. Is this a scandal? Is this considered a scandal? Let's call it a scandal. keep scandals in mind. We may circle back to that. Let's move over to the NBA because we have some regular season awards to hand out. You know, we've been busy. We've had the NFL draft. We had the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. We've just had so many things going that we haven't got around to the NBA regular season awards that we hand out all the time. And so we've got to get to those. I know, like I said, I know we're a little bit late. I know it's coming in, you know, a couple weeks later than we usually do it. But let's get to some NBA awards because we do have to hand these out. Few awards to give out. First award we're going to give out is our most valuable player. I know I should probably, you know, work to some of the smaller ones and come backward, but the most valuable player. And the most valuable player, of course, Steph Curry won the most valuable player this year. But that's not how we do business on the Daily Dose. We look at things a little bit differently here. Because is Steph Curry really the most valuable player? Great player, best player on the best team. But the best team doesn't always have to have the best player. I mean, it's a little bit different. If you have the best team, you've got talent around the best player. So I can't really tell if you're really the best player or not. Here's my MVP. I'm going to give you some regular season stats for my MVP. 24.4 points a game, 10.2 rebounds per game, and 2.2 assists per game. He drug his team somehow to the playoffs. And I don't have any idea how. I don't have any idea how we got this team to the playoffs. But when he got them to the playoffs, His totals actually jumped. He went from 24 points per game to 31.5 points per game. He jumped in rebounding from 10.2 to 11 rebounds per game, and his assists stayed right at about the same. My most valuable player, and it's not even close because he has no help on his team whatsoever. We even played a game. Name another player on his team. My most valuable player is New Orleans Pelicans forward Anthony Davis. And I don't think there's any question. You take him off of that team is battling down at the bottom of the pile with the Lakers and the Knicks. That is a horrible, horrible basketball team. Somehow he got them into the playoffs. You can't even name another player on the team. MVP, Anthony Davis. Coach of the year. And I know that there's a couple different, you know, ideas out there. You know, down at Atlanta, we have some coaches out at, you know, Washington, a couple different. My coach of the year, and I kind of got to give this caveat, Golden State, Steve Kerr. Golden State, and again, I realize they have a ton of talent, 67-15, 110 points per game. But here's the thing you have to realize, you're Golden State. You're like awful almost every single year. You've had like, in your history of existence, you've had like, I don't know, four seasons that you weren't just horrible. They were the best team in the league. Let me repeat that. The Golden State Warriors were the best team in the league. That never happens. That doesn't happen. I mean, when I think of Golden State, I think of like Joe Barry Carroll and maybe some Latrell Sprewell mixed in. You certainly don't think of the greatest team in the league. I mean, I realize they had, you know, the Hardaway and all that stuff with Chris Mullin and everything, but you're Golden State. You're horrible every year. And Steve Kerr somehow got them to be the best team in the league. My rookie of the year. Now, not a ton of huge rookie names out there. The biggest name, we all know, Andrew Wiggins up at Minnesota. Hey, dude was averaging like 19 points a game. He's getting some rebounds. It looks like he really has a bright future. But have you noticed that rookie of the year might be the only award that when we look at it, we just look at it and we say, okay, what's the stats? Points per game. Let's see. You had 17. You had 16. Oh, 17 wins. That is not how I'm going to pick any kind of an award. I can't just go off just your stats only. When Minnesota was the worst team in the league, who cares if you put up big stats? I'm not saying Wiggins can't play. I think he has a very bright future. But I don't care if you put up stats on a horrible team. I could care less. That's why my rookie of the year is Chicago Bulls forward Nikola Mirotic, who is getting 10.2 points per game on a team that actually competes and is actually in the playoffs. Because I don't just look at the points and go down, and that is how every single writer does it. Let's see, you're at 17, you're at 15, you're at 14, all right, 17 wins. Rookie of the year, you're the winner. No, you don't just get to play for a garbage team and put up garbage points and somehow collect that award. Mirotic, you got a huge ugly beard, you're my winner for rookie of the year. Most improved player, and there are a few players that are out there that are at least in consideration. But Jimmy Butler with Chicago Bulls, the job that he has done this year, and again, we talked about this a few weeks ago, when the Bulls management went to him and said, hey, here's a contract, sign this contract and you'll be locked up. And he said, you know what, that's a decent contract, but I'm betting on myself because I think my numbers are actually going to be better and I'm going to make even more money than what you're offering me. Jimmy Butler bet on himself and it paid off. Let me give you some stats for Jimmy Butler. Last year, 13 points a game, 4 rebounds a game, 2.5 assists a game. This year, 20 points per game, nearly 6 rebounds a game, and over 3 assists per game with that contract on the line, with the pressure and the contract. And let's not forget the injuries that the Chicago Bulls have faced all year. Derrick Rose, in and out every week. Joakim Noah, in and out every week. Pau Gasol, who knows what we get from Pau every single week. So the job that Jimmy Butler has done, most improved player, and I don't think it's even close. Sixth man, our sixth man of the year award. You know, you look at a couple of different sixth men, you know, awards, and you know, the guy that can come off the bench and really give you that spark off the bench, valuable player. If you can find these guys, they give you so much from a basketball perspective. Sixth man of the year, and this to me isn't even close, because not only is he the sixth man, he's the seventh man, he's the eighth man, he's the ninth man, and he's the tenth man. I'm talking about the Los Angeles Clippers' Jamal Crawford, who is the only bench that the Clippers even have, because you look at the rest of their bench, it's not very good. Crawford gives them so much lift, though, when he comes into the game. He absolutely could be starting, but he takes that sixth man and he runs with it and he's fine with it. Comes off and just gives them such a huge boost. There are nights that the other team comes out and they're going, you know, 7, 8, 9 deep, and they can't do what Crawford does just as a single sixth man. He is literally the sixth through the tenth man. Now, we have a couple other awards we've got to give out. Few other awards that we have to give out. Our first award here is the Kobe Bryant Award. And you might be wondering what the Kobe Bryant Award is. The Kobe Bryant Award is the player that has the most misses. The most misses, but doesn't stop firing. Just, hey, I don't care. I don't care. I'm putting it up. I don't care if you like it or if you don't. It's going up. Yeah, you might remember something about Kobe doing that. I'm gonna give you this player that did this. Let me just say for just starters, this player is, it's kind of crazy shooting. Now this doesn't sound huge. This doesn't sound huge, but this player shoots between 4 and 5 threes per game. Okay, they shoot about 13. To 17 shots per game. All right, that, you know, that's a decent amount of shots. Now, let me just give you a comparison for this player. J.R. Smith shoots about 4.5 threes per game. J.R. Smith hits about 32% of them. J.R. Smith is not our winner, by the way. 32% from three-point range, he shoots about 4.5. This player shoots about 4.5 threes per game, but Damian Lillard is hitting 13%. 13%? Are you kidding me? You have got to be joking. And he keeps shooting. That's the thing that's amazing to me, is that he keeps shooting the ball. I told you that I'm worried a little bit about LaMarcus Aldridge leaving, and this will have a little bit to do with it, because Damian Lillard goes out and just chucks and chucks and chucks and chucks and does not care whatsoever. I mean, this year, he shot the ball over 1,300 times. Over 1,300 times. Are you kidding me? And I mean, his three-point percentage is 13%. Mix in an assist, dude. The Kobe Bryant Award winner, Damian Lillard, Portland Trailblazers. The Ben Wallace Worst Free Throw Shooter of the Year Award. And you know, here's the problem. Because right now this is Ben Wallace, and Ben Wallace was consistently horrible every year. We may end up renaming this, though. We may have to actually change the name of this. It's weird to rename it for the player that is still playing. Let me give you some stats. This player went 187 for 471 at the free throw line in the regular season. That's right around 39%. And in the playoffs, this player so far has gone 54 for 128 at the line. That's about 42%. But we may be renaming this award for the Los Angeles Clippers forward, DeAndre Jordan, because dude cannot hit a free throw. And, you know, you're going to start hearing more and more about the, you know, the whole Hack-a-Shaq thing and the Hack-a DeAndre or whatever you want to call it. You know, can we ban it? Can we get rid of it? I've told you my feelings on this. Make your free throws and they'll stop doing it. But, you know, here's the thing that I want you to think about. Let's say that you're not a very good rebounder. Like for me personally, I was a decent free throw shooter. I'm not very big, you know, white, slow, all those things. So if it was a fast team, you know what the coach did with me? If it was a really speed, come sit down. When I was coaching, if I had a player that wasn't very good, say at you know, rebounding, whatever we needed a rebound, you know what I did with them is I pulled them out of the game. This is the same thing that applies here. DeAndre Jordan, if you can't make free throws, then I guess you can't be in the game. Or else you better start learning how to make free throws. I will say this. I will offer to do a free shooting clinic for DeAndre Jordan. And I'll bet I can improve his free throw shooting. Just throwing that out there to him. Hey, Kwame Brown Award this year. And you might not know what the Kwame Brown Award is. We have handed it out here before on the Daily Dose. But the Kwame Brown Award goes to the worst rookie in the league. And it's kind of tough because some of these rookies get into bad situations. And again, what exactly do you do with them? Maybe they're not getting playing time. Maybe they're not quite developed yet. Maybe they're not ready. Maybe they go to a team that doesn't need them. But the worst rookie of the year this year is actually going to go to two players. We're going to give it to the Denver Nuggets duo of Gary Harris and Eric Green, who both averaged 3.4 points per game. Now, you sit there, like I said, there's a lot of different situations. Maybe you got on a good team. Maybe you weren't getting very minutes, whatever it might be. You came to the Nuggets. The Nuggets are horrible. The Nuggets are, like, monumentally abysmal, and you still couldn't get into the game and get any points. You still couldn't get any run, even for a awful, awful team. Plus, it was the only way that I could get the Nuggets on any type of an award list was to put them out there for the worst rookies of the year. We give it to the duo Gary Harris, Eric Green. Nice job. Our award this year, the Bill Hanslick Award, we like to call this. Bill Hanslick. If you're not familiar with Bill Hanslick, look him up. Google him. You'll find him. And when you do, put in Bill Hanslick coach, because that record that you see, it's a little bit disconcerting. Worst coach in the league. This goes to the worst coach in the league, by the way. Bill Hanslick, worst coach in the league, goes to New York Knicks coach Derek Fisher. Now, I realize the Knicks were horrible. They went 17-65, and I understand they were trying to tank. Carmelo didn't even play, but I didn't see any reason to look at this team and have any faith that they were doing anything right. I mean, when I looked at some of the bad teams, like there's some bad teams in the NBA. Like I looked at the Lakers. I look at the Lakers, and I say they're horrible. That's an awful team, and they're obviously tanking, but they played pretty hard most nights. They're just not very good. I look at the Sixers, and they're just not doing anything. I mean, they're just trying to keep people out. But I looked at the Knicks, and they're not even trying to run anything. Maybe he'll bounce back, but Derek Fisher didn't look like he had any idea what he was doing on the floor. Hopefully that changes. I know he's a smart guy. He was a smart player. We'll see if he can transition that over to being a smart coach. Because from what I saw this year, very few, you know, adjustments, very few nights that you just thought, man, they're not very good, but boy, they really, really have a lot of effort and intensity. You just don't have that whatsoever. And so our worst coach, Derek Fisher, New York Knicks, well done. Lastly, our most important award that we hand out every year is our LVP. That's right, our least valuable player of the year. And the least valuable player of the year this year, actually pretty simple. There have been, you know, some winners in the past, Andrew Bynum, you know, different guys that just, they come out and they win the LVP. Our least valuable player this year for 2015, Rajon Rondo. I want you to think back to December when that trade was made with the Boston Celtics. The Dallas Mavericks were sitting at 20-8. They looked like they might be on the verge. Maybe they could even make a little run. If they could put this together, Dallas might be kind of a team to watch. They, you know, they're starting to get some good offensive movement. I know Dirk's old and he can't defend, but you know, they've got some pieces there. They've got a couple different, you know, things there that they could do. And then Rajon Rondo got there. And we were like, you know, Rondo, when he was with the Celtics, he looked like he didn't really care. He wasn't trying to play defense. He wasn't really working very hard. But once he gets on a better team, that's just because of that poisonous situation. Once he gets on a better team, that's really going to, we're going to see a huge change. We're going to see that light switch click on. He's going to start playing better and it's going to work. It went so much worse than we ever could have dreamed. He came into Rick Carlisle's offense and had to dominate the ball, which it doesn't work for Carlisle. Carlisle's stuff is a lot more read, react, cut, move. You can't control the ball nonstop because if you do, everything stops. Everybody stands. You need the ball and you need movement. He came in, dominated the ball, totally killed the offense, completely destroyed that offense, totally killed the locker room. After starting 20-8, they finished 50-32. And then in the playoffs, Rondo flat out quit and said he wouldn't be playing anymore. He had a back injury. Our least valuable player of the award of the year goes to Rajon Rondo. Well done. And hey, good news, Laker fans. He's going to be with you soon. Let's talk a little bit about the playoffs because the playoffs are going. Playoffs have actually been very, very interesting. I don't know if it's been good basketball. I would say that it probably has not been good basketball, but it has been very, very full of drama. Chicago and Cleveland. Cleveland gets a big win last night. They go up in the series 3-2 on Chicago. Couple different storylines here. Obviously, Chicago not having Pau Gasol is killing them because they were up 2-1 in this series, and it looked like they were going to, you know, go right through and knock Cleveland out. Not over yet. It still has, you know, some things to be determined. But without Pau Gasol, Chicago looks like a very, very different team. They just don't have that presence inside either offensively or defensively to match up with Cleveland. That's been tough. But here's the real story. Here is the real story of this Chicago-Cleveland series. It is LeBron James throwing his head coach David Black completely under that Greyhound bus. On Sunday, very interesting game. And I know Cleveland won the game last night, but I want to just go back briefly to Sunday. On Sunday, game is tied. Cleveland has the ball on the inbound. And David Blatt is going to call for LeBron to make the inbounds pass. That's what the called play was in the huddle. Now, forget for a second that just a few minutes before when Cleveland was out of timeouts, Blatt tried to call a timeout and his assistant had to come over and drag him back to the bench. Do not call a timeout and ruin the game for us. Forget all that. We don't want to talk about that. After the game, LeBron gets the ball. He does the step back shot, hits it, game winner, game over. Cleveland wins, celebration ensues, everything. After the game, instead of LeBron just going through that, hey, we're fortunate, we got the win, my teammates, this, that, he says, coach drew up a play, and I scratched that play and said, just get me the ball. Now, I realize that a lot of the great players in history have done this. I realize back in 88 or whatever, when Jordan hits the game winner against Cleveland and Craig Elo, that, you know, Phil had actually had a different play that was going to go to like Bill Wennington or whatever. And Jordan said, Phil, just give me the ball. Give me the ball and get out of my way. You don't go out to the media and say about your coach, coach called this, he's an idiot. I'm smarter than he is. So I drew up something different. LeBron and his passive aggressive, you know, that's just kind of how he runs. Going to be interesting. And I realize that Blatt has not been great, but LeBron I don't know what it is with that guy, but he just seems like he kind of finds the way to say the stupidest thing and do the stupidest thing at the right time. I don't know how he does it. Clippers and Houston. Houston gets a win last night to keep the series going. It is now 3-2 in favor of Los Angeles. Rockets had a must-win last night. James Harden goes 26-11-10, but where has that been all series? Because I know, you know, Harden for me, looking down a lot of the stretch, was kind of the MVP with the injuries that Houston had and some of the problems. But honestly, when we've gotten into the playoffs, he hasn't been their best player. Dwight Howard has been their best player. And we all know how that ends up. He gets a few blocks. He can't score. He still doesn't have a go-to move in the offensive side, and they get blown out. Harden has to do what he did last night every night, or else this team isn't going anywhere, and I think this game will probably be over, or the series will probably be over after the next game. Clippers, man. If I could give one compliment to the San Antonio Spurs, it's like once Los Angeles beat them, it seems like that's kind of taken them to a different level. They look like a different team. I expect the Clippers to take them out in the next game. Washington and Atlanta, this series kind of seemed like it was over. Like Washington was just going to dominate. The Wizards don't have John Wall, but this series is all tied up at 2-2. Last night, Atlanta finally hit some shots. Hey, that's a switch. That's a little something different we haven't seen recently. They finally actually hit some shots. For the record, and I've told you, my concern with Atlanta is I don't know who steps over and takes over games for them when they have to. It's kind of been George Teague, and maybe that just has to be who it is. I will say this. That kid Dennis Schroeder is not a shooter. Get the ball out of his hands. Don't let him play late. He just goes out and starts chucking things up. Not having Wall has just really, really changed this series. It does make Washington a little bit different to defend because you're not exactly sure what they're going to do on the offensive end, but not having John Wall has really hurt that team. Memphis and Golden State, didn't this just seem like Memphis kind of had this series in pretty good shape? I mean, they were up 2-1, and it looked like, man, this might be over. But Golden State kind of bounces back, and you know what they did? They tweaked their defense. Golden State said, okay, we're having so many problems inside in the paint. Let's do this. Let's just leave Tony Allen by himself and drop another defender into the paint. Up to this point, I believe Tony Allen has been the key player in this series because of his defense on Steph Curry. He's kind of made Steph a little bit more of a passer and a little bit less of a shooter. He's really, really done a good job of frustrating him. But now, what they did the other night is they said, okay, whoever's defending Tony Allen, if he's on the perimeter, let him go. Let's drop another body into the paint. And if Allen wants to shoot, go ahead. He can't make it. And it did work. It did help a little bit. And the other thing about this series, watching the other night, what Golden State did was they went with some smaller players instead of, okay, we're going to try to match your size. They said, no, forget it. We can't match your size. We're going to put some smaller players out there. Draymond Green may be our center, and we're going to have a hard time matching up with you defensively, but you know what? You're going to have a hard time matching up with us as well. And so that's going to be an interesting series. And now it's a three-game series. Best of three is going to win this and move on. Should be a lot of fun to see what coaching tweaks and what changes that they make as this goes. This is going to be a fun series, and I think this could be headed for seven games. As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. I've told you in the past, the Daily Dose Top 5, it kind of just has a mind of its own. You never know where it's going to go. It could go historical. It could give you some insight. It could go just something completely goofy. You just don't know. This week, with the Deflategate scandal going on, I went back to the memory bank and started thinking about the most memorable scandals. Now, for me, obviously, the most memorable scandals. I can't go back to like the 1919 Black Sox or even the 72 Olympic basketball team. I wasn't alive. So I had to go with the scandals that actually I can remember. But the scandals that just dominated the headlines, the scandals that really, really caught our attention the most. And so this week, the Daily Dose Top 5, my most memorable sports scandals. And like I said, there are a number I know that are out there that are bigger. There are a number, but these are the ones that probably, I guess, just stood out to me the most as far as being so memorable. Number 5 on our list, Daily Dose Top 5, my most memorable scandals in sports. It has to be the Penn State child sex abuse scandal of 2011. And the former assistant coach, Jerry Sandusky, was indicted on 52 counts of child molestation. Sandusky was sentenced to 442 years in prison. Let's hope that the paybacks in prison for him are rough. Number 4 on our list of most memorable sports scandals has to be Kobe Bryant's trip to Colorado in July of 2003. You know, the strange thing about this, and again, these are the things that dominated the headlines. Sports talk, all the major stations, even, CNN and the news, it was the biggest stories of the day. Here you have Kobe Bryant in his prime, comes out to Edwards, Colorado to get some treatment or something on his knee. and a sexual assault complaint was filed by this 19-year-old hotel employee. Kobe had this press conference, and his wife is sitting next to him, and they're both crying, and it was just completely surreal. The trial was a little bit kind of shady, a little bit. Kobe's lawyer released the victim's name publicly, which you absolutely cannot do and shouldn't do. They ended up settling out of court, and Bryant apologized, which was kind of weird to apologize to this victim for mutual whatever. I don't know what he apologized for, but he apologized. And the weirdest thing to me about any of this is, you know, that's been back, you know, that was back in 2003. The weirdest thing to me is if you bring any of this up to Laker fan is completely stunned. How dare you bring that up? Don't you realize that that was number 8? Kobe Bryant is number 24. It's not even the same guy. I don't know why you bring that up. It really is kind of a strange phenomenon, but that the Kobe Bryant thing absolutely dominated the headlines. Number 3 on our list of most memorable scandals, the Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan mess. January 6th, 1994, Tonya Harding's main U.S. competitor, Nancy Kerrigan, and let's just get this on the table. Neither one of these ice skaters were very good. But they were both ice skaters that were going to be competing in the upcoming Olympics in 1994. It was really, really strange. Kerrigan gets attacked after a morning practice to prepare for the 94 Olympics. You might remember someone came in and actually bludgeoned her over the knee with like a crowbar. And then she laid in the hallway screaming, "Why? Why?" But it turns out that it was some friends of Tonya Harding that were trying to eliminate Kerrigan from being any kind of a competition to her, either in the Nationals or in the Olympics. Such a bizarre, like if you wrote a movie, no one would believe this. They're like, no, that's way too stupid. Would never happen. Neither one of them were really great skaters, but Kerrigan actually kind of got her game back together. She healed up in time for the Olympics and somehow, I don't know how, won silver. Harding finished 8th in the Olympics and like broke her shoelace and cried about it. But if you remember, you know, sports at that time, this bizarre ice skating story totally dominated every headline in the news, in the papers. It was everywhere. You couldn't get away from it. You couldn't turn on your TV or radio and not hear about Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan. It was everywhere. Number 2 on my list, most memorable scandals, has to be Pete Rose in 1989. After the one of the most amazing careers ever played in the game of baseball or any sport, Rose was questioned by, at the time, Commissioner Peter Ueberroth about betting on baseball. And he denied it and denied it and denied it. For 15 years, he denied it. Finally, in 2004, because he was trying to get into the Hall of Fame, finally, in 2004, Pete Rose admitted, okay, yeah, I did bet on baseball, but I never bet against our own team. I only bet for us because that was how much faith I had and all this stuff. And despite being one of the greatest ever, he's completely banned from the Hall of Fame, is not even eligible to be on the ballot. They don't even put him on the ballot. And here was the one thing, and I know this in no way compares to the Tom Brady situation, but the lying and the cover-up are what made it so much worse. I really think if Rose would have come out originally and said, yes, I did it, I ask your forgiveness, sit me out for 10 years or whatever it might be, I think he might have actually got on the ballot at some point in our lifetime. As it is now, it doesn't look like they're going to change that anytime soon because he lied and lied and lied. We know you did it. Just admit it. Number 1 on my list, most memorable sports scandals, June 12th, 1994. O.J. Simpson, former Heisman winner and NFL running back, lopped off his ex-wife and her friend's heads. Not exactly how you remember that. Well, that's actually what happened. You know, he refused to turn himself in. After all this happened, he refused to turn himself in. He went and stayed with Robert Kardashian. Yes, that Kardashian. Where we saw Robert Kardashian actually taking like a bag of clothes, may or may not have blood all over them, and disposing of them and getting rid of, I don't know, some might call it evidence. And then we saw this low-speed chase on live television during like the Knicks-Rockets game, and O.J. Simpson is in the back of this white Ford Bronco, everybody is watching this thing on TV. It is one of, again, one of the most surreal things I've ever seen in my entire life as we watch OJ going 20 miles an hour trying to avoid having to turn himself in for the murder. He ends up having the trial, gets declared not guilty in that verdict, in what was easily the trial of the century. And, you know, it was really weird because there was this total split of people. I really think OJ did it, really think OJ didn't do it. The evidence, now, if you got into the actual evidence, you kind of went, okay, yeah, he obviously did it. I mean, he had his victim's blood on his car and on his person. I don't know how that got there, just magical, I guess. But if you actually looked at the evidence, but there was this real split thing of, you know, we hope OJ gets off. It would be a real stroke for, you know, the common person. And it was really, really kind of weird. And when OJ got, you know, found not guilty, there were celebrations. There were, you know, we won. We finally, you know, he got off and we won. And I think a lot of those people that won are actually still waiting for their winnings to arrive. They probably didn't get anything. But without a doubt, the most memorable scandal has to be O.J. Simpson and him running after killing those two people. Was actually later found guilty in a civil court case of killing them, and then later yet found guilty of armed robbery and is serving time, I believe, in the state of Nevada in prison. There is your Daily Dose top five most memorable sports scandals. Hey, if you do get a chance, please go on and rate and review on whatever source you use to subscribe to the podcast, whether that's iTunes, whether that's Podcast Republic, whatever that might be. Just go on, quick review. Hey, thanks. You know, love the show. 5 stars. Boom. That helps us so much in getting up into the rated podcast and getting a little bit more featured content on iTunes and some of those other sites. Next week, you know, the NBA draft is coming. We have NBA playoffs to talk. NHL is getting down to the conference finals. We'll talk a little bit about that. Major League Baseball. Alex Rodriguez is killing it. Could not make me happier. And of course, the NFL is just a year-round thing. And keep an eye on this Tom Brady appeal that I believe is coming up. As usual, we will have our Daily Dose top five. You never, ever want to miss that. I want to thank you all so much for listening. I genuinely do appreciate it. Thank you to JSP. Could not do this without you. Hope you enjoyed the show, everybody. I will see you all next week.